everybody. It's the Afrocast. It's me, Clinton. And it's Brandon.
Wow, this is very, like, scattered. I don't know, what are you trying to do here?
I'm using very few words to get the point across.
Okay, alright.
I'm standing on ceremony, we're just going for the jugular. So welcome back, everybody. We're here for another edition of our little podcast here. So let's get into something people do care about. Start with Apple.
Yeah, I don't know if care about is the right word just yet. So earlier this week, Apple had the Showtime event, and they launched
do they do that every year?
Well, I think the number of services that they've announced, I don't want to say launched because we don't have firm anything yet, but I would argue that this is probably the biggest bunch of services they've announced at one event for some time.
Okay, well, carry on, let me not interrupt you.
Like I said, there were a number of things announced. There was Apple Card, there's also Apple Arcade, Apple TV Plus, Apple TV Channels, just a whole bunch of different things. News Plus. I don't want to chat about News Plus, and I don't want to chat about Card, purely because I don't think those are really relevant.
I don't think Apple Card would even come to South Africa, but... But I stand to be surprised.
Zero fees, I guarantee you, no local institution is going to go for that. Anyway.
I saw a GIF where somebody had like an iPhone and a little message pops up at the top and it says, Apple Card, we noticed you're late on your payments. We're sorry about this. And then the iPhone just shuts down. Please settle your account. And I was like, what Black Mirror episode?
They wouldn't surprise me if they would actually do that. Yeah, so I want to touch quickly on Apple Arcade, which is, I guess, now Apple's venture into the world of gaming. Mm. And it looks like mobile gaming in particular. Arcade is going to be a platform where developers are able to kind of create exclusive and original titles for Apple, essentially.
Yeah.
It's going to be launching a bit later this year. But again, the kind of details around it aren't firmed up as yet. So they say in fall of 2019.
So that's
Q4.
Yeah.
Again, there's no pricing available. They say 150 plus countries. No countries are listed there.
So they're just put 150 countries.
We don't know. Hopefully, South Africa is listed is one of the countries that they're going to be launching it in. We don't know how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
So the Showtime event had a lot of announcements. But no real firm.
So, where are you going to play these games? On your iPhone, Apple TV, MacBook, Mac Pro?
Essentially, all your Apple hardware.
That's actually pretty cool. Apple Watch?
Depends on the game, I guess. But I think perhaps probably the most interesting part is the fact that a lot of the games are going to be exclusive. They say 100 plus titles at launch will be exclusive. And that's a lot of titles, so I'm wondering how they're going to do that.
I'm always skeptical about that, because like Nintendo announced that the new Labo kit, the VR1, is going to have 60 plus games. But I highly suspect that these games are going to be mini games, or like Mario Party or WarioWare games, where you can play through them in 60 seconds. And when I hear Apple say something similar, I think the same thing. That or it's going to be shovelware. They're just going to go to, you go to any app store, the Apple App Store, the Google Play Store. That's filled with hundreds of games every day that no one wants to play and no one will ever think about. So when they say we're going to have that many games, I'm very skeptical.
Yeah, well, it definitely means of the kind of thing of quantity over quality, and I'm really hoping that's not the case.
I wonder if they're not including games that are currently on the App Store as well.
Well, I mean, are those then new and exclusive?
Yeah, so that's why this is new.
Well, I mean, you could say that if it's developed specifically for Apple, that it's exclusive. I don't know. The thing about Apple is, my problem with them is that they make up language. What was the liquid crystal display that they called it? What? Liquid Retina, right? Like, they just make up names that sound interesting. So when you say new and exclusive, I'm kind of like, I wonder how they're going to interpret that.
Yeah, I think they kind of lost the power to kind of say whatever they felt like, and people just were in awe, unfortunately, when Steve Jobs passed away. They kind of lost that kind of cachet.
I suppose.
I think now people are a lot more skeptical, and I think I think all of us here at the table are pretty skeptical about this. So
I do wonder if this is a response to Stadia. Like, I mean, we had Stadia last week, and then now we suddenly have Apple releasing or announcing Arcade.
If it is, it's really weak.
And I mean, it kind of seems like it to me because it's very thin on the ground, right? Oh, cool, we're going to have, like, some of these images, like, that I'm looking at in your story just kind of look like they were thrown together over the last week. Sorry, Apple, I'm just saying what I see. And especially with Stadia being announced, it seems a bit odd to me. Were there rumors about this for a long time already?
This is one of the surprising announcements.
Oh, okay.
I think the other things they announced, we expected some of them were rumors, but this one's really...
It's weird. And also, are we now entering a world where we now have Xbox, PlayStation, Android, iPhone, and then whatever, and then PC as platforms to play games on? Like, is this where we're going?
I'm assuming that they're trying to kind of hedge their bets on the whole mobile gaming, which is kind of blowing up at the moment, and hoping that it'll bring a lot more players or users back to Apple hardware.
Okay.
It's so weird because mobile gaming was kicked off by the iPhone. Not specifically by Apple, I think kind of third party.
I would argue that it was Nokia and Snake.
No. We're talking about different things. I think the iPhone really popularized mobile gaming. So it's weird that they're kind of doing something different-ish when they already have a huge market. It's just very weird. I don't see the point, honestly.
Anyway, what else did Apple announce?
Yeah, I think, like I said, Apple Arcade is probably one of those things you're going to have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Details of it on the ground. Let's actually see what Apple...
Yeah, let me not be a naysayer.
And then one of the things that actually was kind of teased before the Showtime event was Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
Which is going to be their kind of platform for original content. They pulled out a lot of big guns at the Showtime event. The likes of Steven Spielberg was there.
Hang on. Whoa. Didn't Steven Spielberg have issue with the fact that Netflix won some Emmy Awards?
I cannot comment.
Wait, was that Spielberg?
I'm pretty sure that was Spielberg.
One of the old directors that people used to love. I'll look it up. Hold on.
Anyway, carry on.
So Steven Spielberg, he has his project that he's working on. From what I understand, it's going to be like a bunch of different kind of stories.
Okay.
Kind of in the same vein as Twilight Zone in that.
Okay. Is it not Twilight Zone though? Because what's the name?
That's coming to is that CBS or ABC? One of the US networks that Jordan Peele's working on.
Ah, I can't remember for the life of me.
But so they got some heavy hitters. Like I said, Steven Spielberg, J.J. Abrams is producing another series for them. They got some actors like Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah, which is awesome. That alone makes me interested in this.
They also got ladies like.
Jennifer Aniston.
Reese Witherspoon. They had Steve Carell on stage as well.
Oh, wow.
That stuff. Octavia Spencer. And then the biggest name of them all, Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, wow.
When Oprah Winfrey gives you the cosign, you know that you...
the big O. People are kind of worried because he's going to be making whatever for them, and they're worried that she won't be able to run for president.
That was my immediate thought. 2020 presidency.
So half of the people were like, oh, thank God, and the rest of them were...
So Netflix has the Obamas. But Apple has Oprah.
Yeah.
Therefore, Apple wins.
I'll give you the royalty on the
years. So, Brendan, you were right. It was Spielberg. He kind of criticized. Not kind of. He definitely criticized Netflix. And then he was here. Money, eh?
It's funny. It's just funny. I just found it really weird how he slams streaming media and then he's working with Apple on something that would likely be streamed.
Yeah, I guess a lot like Apple Arcade, the details are so thin on the ground for TV Plus. There's a whole bunch of content that apparently, original content that Apple is working on.
So is this exclusive to Apple hardware is my question? Or could I just subscribe?
So it'll work on the Apple TV app.
Yeah. Oh, the Apple TV app.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So as far as I understand, it won't be
necessarily hardware exclusive.
Hardware, dependent.
Okay, all right, that's interesting.
So if your device supports the app, or rather the latest iteration of the app, then you should be able to get Apple TV Plus.
Okay.
They mentioned, again, a whole bunch of countries that are going to get it.
Yeah.
there's no official list, so we still don't know where South Africa can get. But I mean, Apple TV is available in South Africa, so the assumption is that it should be.
And also, we are now in Apple's initial release period, or at least we were for last year's iPhone. Mm-hmm. So I would assume that...
Hopefully our profile has risen.
Yeah, hopefully Apple's like, yeah, South Africa, give it to them.
Yeah. So
unless we've just ruined that entire that entire thing in this podcast.
I doubt that Apple's...
I don't know. Tim Apple might be listening. You don't know.
Tim, if you're listening, please. Tim, bring all the things you have.
I think people are just kind of livid with the amount of streaming services.
Well, that kind of actually...
Don't know how much...
That feeds into what Apple actually also announced. Called TV channels.
Okay. So what is that?
It's going to be a subscription-based service, but kind of different in the fact that... kind of services like HBO, Amazon Prime.
Okay.
You can actually stream shows from those specific services.
Okay.
And only pay for essentially what you're streaming.
Oh.
Which could be interesting. The only issue I can foresee is pricing.
Mm.
Because they haven't released any details around it. But during the demo, they were showing one of the, I think, Amazon Prime shows. On the demo, they had a lady that was... selected the show, said she wants to stream the show.
Yeah.
And then I saw for a very, very split second, there was a price. I think it was $10.99. Now, I'm not too sure if that's for the entire show.
Yeah, or if it's for
the entire service.
Wow.
So, that would be, I hope it's the latter.
Yeah, so it could potentially add up to quite a big bill.
Yeah.
Depending on how much you're streaming or who you're streaming from.
I mean, I'm looking at this and going, like, what really is the point here of this? I mean, okay, so HBO, we can't get HBO here as far as
HBO
I'm aware.
No, well, I mean,
you can.
It has a pretty strong relationship.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you got Showmax, which brings in the only show that anybody cares about on HBO, which is Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So, like you say, it comes down to pricing, though, because, I mean, this sounds like something I would be interested in because, like, I don't want to necessarily have a subscription for Prime or Hulu or HBO or all three if I could have one and then watch certain things from there. Like, I would really like to watch The Grand Tour, but I'm not interested in subscribing to Amazon Prime just to watch one show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Having a unified platform makes a lot of sense, but the price isn't right.
No,
I'm going to go.
Absolutely.
It's just, all of this is hilarious because Netflix really popularized streaming of content and everyone loved it because it was everything in one and it was like, oh, why would I need cable? But now everything is splintering out to their own streaming platform. And then people are saying, you know what would be good? If we could buy a package which had all the streaming services, it's like, oh my God, we've just gone around the map to pay more television.
You're pretty correct there. But
time is just a flat.
The thing is, though, is that now I can watch it in my own time, you know? I don't need to adhere to a schedule that is on something like DSTV. I can watch it myself. But like Clinton says, we have kind of just gone full circle and come back around to, hey, look, we have television again.
Yeah, so like I said, a lot of announcements from Apple, very few concrete details, especially around where we're available in South Africa and when we'll actually launch in South Africa. But yeah, I guess kind of watch this space.
Yeah.
If you're interested in Apple's kind of services and stuff like that,
yeah, I would also be interested to see if they support Chrome because up until a few, I think it was last year, you couldn't actually stream Apple events on anything other than an Apple product or Windows 10 Edge, or Windows 10 Edge, the Internet Explorer replacement, which I thought was really funny. Clinton.
Yes. I'm sorry. I was reading some terrible.
Were you enamored?
Brendan, tell us about the Division 2. Get my mind off of this.
Okay.
I have to. I read somewhere that there's a unit of measurement called 100 weight. Do you know how many pounds are in 100 weight?
I don't know, but did this.
No, guess, tell me.
100.
112. Tell me about the Division 2.
Okay, well, speaking of terrible American measurements. So the Division 2 is out at the moment. I've been playing it for nearly 3 weeks now. Load shedding got in the way of that a lot.
That ended this week?
That ended this week. Hey, we're not talking about load shedding, but we are kind of. Knock on wood. So the Division 2, I've been playing it for about 3 weeks. I've put in a total of about 25 hours. I'm nearly finished the main story campaign. It's very long. It's 30 hours, pretty much, of the main story thing, and then the end game content comes, which I'm really looking forward to. I've watched a lot of videos about it, and it seems really exciting. But let's get into the beginning of the game. So, Division 2, you take control of a mute agent of the Secure Homeland Division. I say mute because your character never speaks. I don't know why. This is still strong a thing in 2019. No, but you say nothing. And also...
super strong and super tough.
Anyway, so you take control of this character. You get the nickname The Sheriff. Okay.
Do you get a tin star?
No, you do not. You are just called The Sheriff. I don't know why. But, yeah, so you are a member of the Secure Homeland Division. You are death incarnate, pretty much. And you have to clean up the streets of Washington, D.C., the capital of America. And Washington has been overthrown by a number of gangs and factions. And you have to restore order. And nobody really cares about the story in this game because it's all about the loot and fighting other people and just progressing. So... how is that experience? So, Division 2, Ubisoft and Massive, one of the big criticisms from the last game was that loot felt kind of meh. Like, you didn't really get much of it. This game, you get loot thrown at you. You go around a corner, oh, here's a new weapons case. Oh, here's a new armor piece. Oh, here's a new gas mask. Oh, here's new crafting materials.
I've heard from people that it's got too much.
No, there's no such thing, all right? Anybody that says that needs to shut up, because then you need to go and play Anthem, right? If there's too much loot for you, go and play Anthem, all right? Where there's no loot.
Don't do that, though.
This game throws loot at you, and even if that is a problem for you, I don't think that it should be, because when you're leveling up, like, you're constantly striving for better gear and looking for new stuff, and this game actually just throws it at you. And what's really nice about this loot is that you actually get gear sets now right at the beginning of the game. So you can get certain perks, like you'll do 10% more damage to elites, or you get additional health if you have two pieces of a set, as well as the previous benefits. So that's really nice, because it kind of teaches you about min-maxing your stats as you play through the game, which is really, really nice. And then as for the AI in this game is ridiculous. Like, and I mean that in the best way possible. There are, so far I've encountered three factions, and each of them is completely different in how they attack you. Each of them is completely different in how they approach combat, and as such, it forces you to kind of take, and I call this the Wildlands approach to combat. So in Ghost Recon Wildlands, you had to be very methodical about what you did. Like, you couldn't just rush into a base and just start killing people. You could, but you would die 9 out of 10 times. So with the Division in the original game, you could pretty much just camp behind cover and lay waste to enemies. They wouldn't approach you. There would be one or two shotgunners that came near you, but you could see them a mile away and you could get rid of them. This game is very different. Enemies are constantly on the move, even if they don't have a shotgun. If they have, like, an auto rifle, they will move up to the side of you and attack you. Elite enemies move around the map constantly. Let's call them kill boxes within each mission. They move around constantly, forcing you to move out of cover, heal, pop grenades, kind of. And when you die, and you will die a lot in this game if you play it alone, it forces you to take a step back and go, right, how do I approach this? What should I be doing? Where should I be going? Where should I be looking for cover? Should I deploy my skills now? One of the nice things is that the bullet sponginess of enemies has disappeared in a way. So red health enemies, so your basic, like,
guy wearing a beanie,
rank and file enemies, they go down really quickly. If you have a good sniper rifle and you shoot dude in the head, he's down. Goodbye. No need to carry on with that story. But then as you reach, like, your purple health enemies and your elites, which have, like, yellow bar health, and you'll notice that they have a lot of armor on them. But what is nice is that each of these enemies has a weak spot. That if you shoot that weak spot, you'll do more damage. But also armor can be chipped off with a lot of work. So if you lay down a light machine gun fire on a elite that's armored to the bone, you'll eventually chip away that armor, revealing pretty much skin, and then you can take them out. It's really well done in the terms of, like, in the first game there was this weird disconnect of, like you said, Clinton, dude in a beanie takes 5 headshots to bring down.
I was going to say, this sounds like it was a direct answer to the problems people had with the first games, where it was basically just people had picked up guns and began looting and ravaging people.
And become invincible in the meantime.
And you shoot them in the head and they're
like, I understand that there needs to be a degree of bullet sponginess in this sort of game, because it's a loot shooter and you don't want to just have people running around, hit one headshot, everything. And as a result, like, the weapons also have weight as well. So you can't just run around with a marksman's rifle all the time. You can't just run around with a LMG all the time. Like, you need to kind of create loadouts to match whatever you're doing. Just to talk about the gameplay a little bit, during the main campaign, you go through DC, and there's districts within each place. And then within each district, there's either a settlement, or there's a safe house, or both. Yes, they do. But it's actually really well done. So the first settlement you encounter is the theater. And you need to do main missions in order to upgrade this theater. And as you upgrade the theater, you unlock new things that you can kind of, not do, but you kind of improve the settlement. And this is important because once you start improving the settlement starts sending people out to do things like collecting water and collecting components and collecting food and that sort of stuff. And then if you go and help these people, like, it's not something that you're prompted to do, but if you go and you follow these people and you help them get water and that sort of stuff, it actually, like, benefits you because so each of these areas has sort of things called checkpoints. So checkpoints are held by enemies, and if you take control of them, the JTF, the Joint Task Force, takes control of that area. What's really nice about that is that if you go to one of these checkpoints and you load them up with food, water, and electrical components, they actually give you a bonus that lets you find loot see loot better in a wider radius.
This sounds like a radio tower.
No, it's not a radio tower though, because it's a really natural way of kind of helping you, the player, pick up loot, number one. And also, when you return to these places while you're fast traveling around the map, there's actually, like, something that you can do that kind of gives you a sense of, oh, okay, well, I've got 100 or 200 food, I need to get rid of it, let me just give it to these people, rather than in the last game where you had stuff like food and soda and all these weird things that gave you bonuses but nobody ever used them because they were stupid. So there's that. Then there's your safe houses that you unlock as you play through the game. The settlements are a really nice thing that you upgrade. They kind of give you something to do while you are doing your main missions. And then there's, of course, the Dark Zone. So I went into the Dark Zone for the first time this weekend, and it was a hell of a lot of fun.
So the Dark Zone is the PvE.
Yes, but there is another PvE area or PvE thing called Conflict, which you can get to from the main base of operations, and that's a 4v4 team deathmatch.
Oh, and the Dark Zone is just lone wolf stuff, right?
You can go in with a fire team, but most of the time, if you go in there alone, it's you, the enemies, and other players. What's really nice about this, though, is that they've reworked the rogue system a hell of a lot. So in Division 1, if you shot somebody, you immediately went rogue. Now there are certain levels to going rogue. So if you if you're with a team, for instance, and you go and loot a chest. Let's just call it a chest because I can't remember the exact name right now. You go and loot a chest. If you can share that loot with people, or you can claim it all for yourself. If you claim it all for yourself, that adds to your rogue counter, right? So at the above your name, there'll be a division symbol, or there will be the skull symbol for the rogue. And as you do things that are evil, you know, you will increase this rogue counter until eventually there's a manhunt that's put out for you. And then everybody on the map can see where you are,
or in that dark zone can see where you are and they can hunt you down and they can get a bonus and you will lose stuff. If you survive the manhunt though, you get massive bonuses.
Does the dark zone still have those? My favorite part about the first game when I played it was the extraction. When you get to
yes.
you wait for the helicopter to arrive, and everyone just stands in a circle, and it's a flippin' Mexican show.
So what's interesting is that in the last game, anything you picked up in the dark zone, you could not take out without extracting it. This time, however, there is stuff in the dark zone that you can pick up. But they're the really high quality items you have to extract. And Massive and Ubisoft brought a few features from Extraction back from Division 1 into Division 2. So if anybody stuck around for the Division after launch, you'll know that later on in the game, Extraction became way more sweaty. So what would happen is when you would extract, there was an option for players to cut the rope. Right, so that all of the gear that was being extracted would be taken to this person would now get it, which I thought was a really, really great way of messing with people. And they brought it back in this one. And on Saturday, Saturday night, I cut somebody's rope while they were extracting, and I felt really good. That does add to your rope counter, by the way. Some other things to mention, the game looks absolutely gorgeous. Washington, D.C. is a fantastic setting for a game like this. Even better is that most of the missions take place in like museums or kind of historical landmarks. There's one at the Lincoln Memorial that you have to fight through, which is amazing.
Is the Lincoln Memorial up?
Yes.
Well, yeah.
No, there's a mission right in the beginning of the game. There's a mission where you fight through the Space and Air Museum, which is incredible, right? There's a part where you are fighting on Mars, right? It's just like a museum exhibit of Mars, but it is so well done and so interesting. Then there's the Natural History Museum where you fight in Vietnam, like a set piece of Vietnam with like music blaring and little trenches. Everything is just so well executed in this game. And the more I play it, the more I realize how bad Anthem is. I'm not trying to take a pot shot here at Anthem. Like, when you play a game that is as polished as The Division is, there are some bugs, right? So I've had an issue where my CPU ramps up and then the game crashes. That seems to happen once a day, and then it's done. I don't know what the issue is, but hopefully there's a patch coming too.
You have to pay.
Yeah. So far, though, I am incredibly impressed with this game. It shows up Destiny. It shows up the first Division. It shows up pretty much anything to do with loot shooting. This is fantastic. And I know that people I hear what Clinton is saying about, oh, there might be too much loot. I disagree. I think that the way that this is done is it forces you to kind of, or it encourages you to kind of try different play styles. I never use shotguns in games. At the moment, my main primary weapon is a shotgun because it works really well. And that's something that I would never have thought of using if the game kind of didn't encourage me to do it. If you are a fan of loot shooter games, this is definitely something that you want to invest time into. I haven't reached the end game yet, so I can't comment on that right now. But if 30 hours is of this game is absolutely worth it. And then once the end game hits, I'll pen some thoughts about that. And then finally, we'll do a full review of the full game, and then I'll pen some thoughts about the end game. But so far, this is fantastic. Ubisoft and Massive have done a fantastic job with this game, and I am well impressed and very happy with the product that they've put out here.
That's good to hear, because like you said, Anthem has just been a circus of a
comedy of errors.
It's been bad, and after Fallout 76 also did the same thing kind of.
Yeah, also there's a mission in one of these games where you go into the past, not technically, it's kind of like an area that's been abandoned. And you go into this area and are walking around and you hear like this old school music, like Fallout style music, and you're like, this is better than Fallout 76. Just this one little side mission that I'm doing. So yeah, if you're a fan of loot shooters, The Division 2 is absolutely worth your time.
Yeah, there's multiple events this week. One of the other big ones was Huawei, and they unveiled their new flagship phones for the first half of the year, and that's the P30 and P30 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
They also had some curious things like smart eyewear, but I don't want to get bogged down into that.
It's best not to mention it. Don't encourage that sort of behavior. Anyway, Robin, tell us about the P30 and P30 Pro.
Yeah, so I'm not going to worry about the P30 at all. P30 Pro is really the better of the two in terms of specifications. We don't have local pricing yet, or rather, I know local pricing. I just can't tell you guys.
Oh, okay. I see how it is. NDAs and stuff.
So I think a lot like the P20 and P20 Pro last year, the difference in pricing won't be too much. And I guess the kind of value of actually saving up a bit more, or perhaps shelling out a bit more money for the P20 Pro, or for the
P30 Pro,
is going to be worthwhile. Speaking of the device,
it seems like, I was watching the live stream with you yesterday, and it was just so much talk of photography.
Yeah, it is super, super, super photography focused. I guess they're trying to kind of amp up all the things that the P20 Pro was kind of touting last year. There was also a big kind of camera focus around that. It had a triple lens setup and a massive 40 megapixel wide angle lens. I guess the P30 Pro now kind of amps it up a little bit more. It's also
10 lenses.
No. We're not in Nokia.
But they've gone with four lenses in the back. three of those are kind of in the same kind of vein as the P20 Pro, in that there's a 40, 20, and 8 megapixel.
Yeah.
60 angle. I know that's not how cameras work, by the way. You don't just add them up.
But and then the fourth lens is now a TOF 3D kind of sensing camera.
Yeah.
That's we saw being used on the LG G8 Q this year at MWC 19. And kind of how Huawei is using their TOF camera is for depth sensing.
Yeah.
So when you're taking portrait shots, or perhaps images where there's a lot of objects in the background and foreground, you can then change the depth of field and kind of make that nice bokeh effect.
Don't you mean bokeh?
I say bokeh.
Okay.
What do you mean,
bokeh? Anyway, potato, pulled shard.
Yeah. You know, bokeh, whatever you want to call it. That effect is essentially that kind of like a hazy blurring around.
Yeah, it's like a depth of field. Like the foreground is in focus while the background is blurred.
I don't know why it's such a complicated thing.
In a smartphone, I can understand why.
Well, yeah, I think when you're taking selfies and like that, it's really like the most coveted thing to have.
I live in a different world. It's not one. I thought, you know what? I got to take a selfie and the background has to be blurred.
So, again, kind of sticking with the cameras, the big focus here now is on zooming.
That telephoto thing is so clever.
Yeah. So, there are a couple of different ranges of zoom that the P30 Pro is going to be touting. So, it has... Let me just pull it up here. So it's optical zoom. It's got 5x optical zoom.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah, very good.
Especially for a phone.
Well, yeah, when you compare it to the iPhone XS Max and the Galaxy S10 Plus.
Yeah.
They've only got 2x optical
zoom. Yeah.
And I guess the P30 Pro is kind of beating them in all regards.
When it comes to camera, though, I don't think any manufacturer can beat Huawei at this point in time. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it helps that Leica is kind of sort of.
Yeah.
And the hybrid zoom, they got 10x hybrid zoom, and then perhaps the most impressive stat is 50x digital zoom.
Yeah, that's...
Which is crazy. That's, you're heading into like DSLR level.
Yeah.
I don't know, because when they say that, I need to see it in action.
I was lucky enough during that aforementioned NDA briefing to kind of see it in action. They went to a couple of the local carriers.
Yeah.
Vodacom, MTN, and Celsius, their buildings.
Yeah.
And they showed the difference between an iPhone XS Max, I believe, and Galaxy S10 Plus, and then the new P30 Pro.
Kind
of saw the difference in terms of the zooming quality.
Isn't comparative advertising.
Well, this is not advertising.
No, they're just showing you the difference. Okay. That's a comparison, not comparative advertising.
I'm not a lawyer, but okay.
And what it obviously must have looked better. Yeah, like they were not showing it to you.
Yeah, obviously we're gonna put it through our own testing to see how it performs. But on paper right now, it seems like it's gonna be the best camera setup.
I mean, I just saw what they were showing off during the presentation yesterday.
Yeah, I think it's always good to take a pinch of salt when Huawei.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Pictures.
They have been caught a couple of times doing DSLR photos when they weren't supposed to.
But what I did see on stage, like the live demo that they showed off. I mean, I'm not saying that you can't fake a live demo, but the one that was on stage during the presentation, I was really impressed with that.
Yeah, and I mean, another big feature about the cameras on this phone, or on the P30 Pro, is the ISO.
Oh, yeah.
It can help a lot with low light photography, if that's your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what did they say the ISO was?
It was 409,600. That's the highest it will go. So, just kind of put it into perspective for you. The Galaxy S10 Plus, which I guess is the new Android phone in the market, it has a maximum ISO of 6,400. So just to put it in perspective, the P30 Pro is 409,600. That's a lot of times more.
A lot of times more. Cannot stress this enough. It is a lot of times more.
Yeah, so I think a lot of times that manufacturers kind of say, you know, this is near DSLR level.
Yeah, now...
A lot of the aspects of the P30 Pro are really near DSLR level.
Yeah.
You can actually kind of say that now.
The only thing you can't do is strap an extra lens onto it now, yeah, pretty much, you know? Not yet. But that ISO, I think we can't talk about this phone without talking about that low light photography they showed off.
Yeah.
I mean,
there was one that they say it was on African night sky. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It was, but it looked amazing. Just,
wow.
Just the country of Africa.
Just the country of Africa.
So hopefully we can put that to good use when we get some review units in.
Yeah.
And again, I also want to kind of see how it compares to the Galaxy S10
Plus,
because that's also a pretty good camera setup.
Also, the fact that you can charge pretty much anything off of it,
yeah,
which is pretty cool.
So,
charge a mouse.
So the reverse charging was something that they showed off with the Mate 20 Pro late last year. And then kind of Samsung hit back with...
look, we can also do it.
Reverse charging specifically for the Galaxy Bud.
Yeah.
So then Huawei then replied with their own reverse charging that can essentially charge almost anything that can fit onto the actual...
Yeah. Why not, though?
Just because they can.
Exactly. Why not?
You've got to flex on your competitors.
Well, I think it's quite interesting in that it's not necessarily manufacturer-dependent. So
yeah.
If you do have wireless earphones that have a case that can actually handle wireless charging...
Then go for it.
Yeah. You're not kind of like bound to what a particular manufacturer is.
Yeah.
Which is quite nice.
I think that's really cool. I mean, and leave it to China to make a very open ecosystem.
Okay, but
in terms of the charging.
How large is the battery?
The battery only has 4,200 milliamps, so it's Mate 20 Pro. Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. That's a lot. And then also, I mean, it comes with, it supports 15-watt wireless charging.
Mm-hmm.
15-watt wireless charging, people.
Yeah, like I said, when Huawei, I guess when their phones are kind of known for things, it's going to be, obviously cameras is going to be one.
Yeah.
I think now battery.
Battery, yeah. Damn. And then they also showed off a massive battery bank that can charge your laptop through USB-C.
Was it 12,000?
I'll take a look at it now.
The charging laptop doesn't really mean capacity, right? It's not power. I don't know voltage, current, one of them. It's very hard to find a battery bank that can do that. See, this is why I'm a writer. So if it can charge a laptop, that's really good. It's so weird because now we're going towards everything being USB Type-C, but Type-C is one of the most splintered, quote-unquote, standards I've ever seen.
Well, you don't need to tell me, bro.
So if a battery bank that can charge a laptop, they do exist. They have existed for some time, but it's always good to see bigger names doing them because they are a very small section of the market.
Yeah, so kind of shifting focus back to the P30 Pro, some of the kind of other things you might be wondering about, display, 6.47 inch, it's bezel-less, but it still has that kind of, I call it a teardrop at the top, where the front-facing camera is housed, upgraded the front-facing camera, it's now 32 megapixel, and it has some of Huawei's kind of AI technology.
Okay, caked into it.
Yeah. So you can take better selfies if that's your thing. and some color options. So as far as I understand, there are going to be 5 different color options. Not all of them when it comes to Africa. From what I understand, the black one is coming, the Aurora, which I guess is the inverse version of the Twilight.
Okay, yeah.
So the gradient goes from, I guess, like a turquoise blue
down to like a white.
A darker blue.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
The one you're referring to is called, it's got a weird
Crystal.
Name. Yeah, Crystal or something. It's got a really weird name. I don't foresee that one selling as well as, say, the Twilight colors have.
That Twilight is still the most beautiful color I've ever seen in the world.
Yeah, that's one of the... I would go that far, but...
it's like seeing the face of God.
It is, though. It's really pretty. Have you ever seen it in real life? It's super
honestly,
pretty, man.
I'm going to bring it up for me there, Brendan. Bring it up, Jamie.
Well, the big reason why the P20 Pro probably did so well.
That color.
People really spending several months' paychecks on phones.
Dude, look at it. Yes. Look at it. Look at how pretty that color is. Tell me you wouldn't want that to look at that every single day.
It looks like the default wallpaper on 90% of flagship phones, but now it's on the back of your phone.
It looks pretty. I think it looks really,
just
really pretty.
Put it in a cover anyway.
It's also shiny. Shut up. I won't put it in a cover.
All right.
Put it in a clear cover.
So if we look internally now, it's got the octa-core Kirin 980 chipset.
Oh, that's a good one.
What you saw in the Mate 20 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of standard fare for Huawei's new P-series phones. They often don't have the...
That has
they
the...
They have the latest chipset.
Yeah.
They don't have the, I guess, the new one that they'll bring out for the year. So probably the Mate 30 Pro, that's not... I'm guessing that's
It's going to be the name.
Later this year, we'll probably have the latest chips. Anyway,
yeah.
But
that has the AI chip in it as well, that chipset, doesn't it?
It has all the AI functionality.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, Huawei have not chosen to put a 5G capable modem in.
I think that's smart, though.
I don't think so, because...
But why? No one's going to be
because
able to use it.
Surely, if you look at what Samsung did, they're not bringing the 5G phone to South Africa anytime soon.
Yeah.
So why not then kind of lay down a market and say, that 5G foldable Mate X, that's going to be out of everyone's price range.
Yeah, that's actually true,
Because they're going to have a new phone next year, and if the 5G market has advanced by then they'll put a chip in.
Well,
like, that's my reasoning.
I just don't see any reason why not to, because...
I mean, people are starting to roll out...
The 5G... P30 Pro is too expensive for people. They can just go to the normal P30.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of see where your head is at. I mean, create it now, and then people can choose. And then, I mean, you have a market where Rain is talking about launching a 5G network.
Yeah, they're doing this probably middle of the year.
Yeah.
August.
So it makes sort of sense. Even if you don't use that functionality now, you label it and say, we have 5G. It's going to cost, like Samsung did with the S10 5G. Like, that's a clear indicator. If you buy this phone, you're buying it for future technology that you can't use the day you buy it, probably.
And I mean, these phones are all covered with user. So
yeah.
If your network doesn't support 5G, then just get the discount and all stuff.
Yeah.
Speaking of the dual SIM, though, this is not really confirmed yet.
Yeah.
But we should be expecting all the carriers to cater to the dual SIM slot version of the P30 Pro and P30.
Okay.
But again, unconfirmed yet. All I can say for now is that Huawei will probably be launching this phone in early April.
Okay.
That's like a few weeks.
Next week.
Yeah, it's next week.
Probably this time next week we could even be hearing. I don't know.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, because there's a local launch event next week, correct?
That's what you're saying. I can't say anything.
I know that because I've received an invitation that there is a local event next week. Okay. I signed nothing. So I suspect we'll hear more about it next week in terms of launch dates, pricing, and whether any of the accessories that were mentioned are coming.
Speaking of accessories, there will be a significant local announcement in that regard from
Huawei. What are the accessories?
So
build them overseas.
So there was the Watch GT. They've added two new watch faces. There's a 46 millimeter, and then there's a smaller one. I can't remember that off the top of my head. Then there's two wireless earbud type things. So there's
the free lace,
which kind of has a they look like a sportier version. Mm-hmm. They have like a string, they connect it to each other. It's one continuous thing. that you then stick into your ears, and then they join together through a loop. You take off one of the ear buds, and then it reveals a USB-C port, and you can use your P30 to charge it, which is pretty cool. And then the actual buds are magnetic, so that they'll stick together when you're not using them, and then when you pull them apart, they'll automatically pair with your phone, which I think is a nice little feature. And then there's the free buds, I believe they're called, which is sort of like the AirPods. Stick them into your ears, they're wireless, and then the case charges them. I mean, there's not much we can say about those. There's not much was said about them. So yeah, well,
I'm kind of referring to also the cases and things like
that. Oh, yeah, the cases.
Like, historically, has had a real tough time in getting
accessories
into the country. And they're going to announce something next week at the launch event to kind of allay people's fears on that.
I highly doubt that the announcement is going to be, we're not getting any of them. That would be, can you imagine a big company comes on stage to say, you're not getting jack?
Yeah, look at all these cameras. We're not getting
I really hope that the big announcement is not about the smart eyewear.
I really hope so too.
Tell me about this quick, guys, because you've been not.
It's basically a replacement for your in-ear headphones, except in sunglasses format or glasses format.
Those have existed for a while.
So this has it has an antenna, it has a battery, it has a microphone, I believe.
Yeah.
And basically you just wear them and then you can take calls. And really.
So they don't do anything with the lenses themselves?
No.
It's not Google Glass.
It's not Google Glass or anything. It's just a wireless headset in the form of sunglasses.
Yeah, and don't expect this to come to South Africa. I don't suspect any market for it whatsoever.
And they also don't look very nice. I'm just going to say it.
The guy presenting from, what was the company called? Something Monster.
Cute Monster. Nice Monster. Oh man!
They're from Korea, and he was showing off so many great looks, and he was saying they look like this, they look like this.
Gentle Monster. There we go.
I don't suspect they'll come to South Africa anytime soon. There's really no
market. Can we just say they look like sunglasses for hipsters?
Okay. Maybe I've been too judgmental on this, because if you do wear glasses most of the time, right? Like you need a prescription set of sunglasses, and you're also the type of person who always has headphones in. This could be both, right? I think that's okay.
I don't know. I think I'd have to wear them and see how they work.
No.
Yeah.
So especially the call quality.
Are they being marked as sunglasses, though?
No.
Or just glasses?
No, they're sunglasses.
Yeah, they're sunglasses. Well,
there's one with a clear lens here.
Yeah, there was a clear lens. Was sunglasses. The only ones we saw were sunglasses.
It's just, I'm a big fan for kind of rolling things into one system. And I think if you're somebody who already wears subscription glasses, I don't even know if they'll offer this with subscription stuff. Flipping streaming services on the brain here. I think if you're somebody who does wear glasses all of the time, because you need it for your eyesight, and you listen to a lot of music or podcasts or whatever, having both of them on your face anyway at the same time sounds like it makes sense.
I see this as your phone rings, yes. And you answer it.
Yes.
And then you're like, hello. Hello?
So, what's wrong with that?
And then you see the Bluetooth thing saying, connected to Gentle Monster sunglasses.
Do you know
what? And then your sunglasses are in your car.
Okay. Do you know what would be cool? If these glasses, like, on the side have an LED. Because you know the problem with using, Bluetooth headphones, like, no one knows you're on a call. They could, like, light up to say, on call.
No,
Clinton. That would look cool.
No.
That's going to be in a movie before the end of the year. All I know is
they remind me of those Oakley sunglasses that had, like, I guess,
I've seen this. It has been done
before. I'm no harbinger of style or taste. Even I know those look terrible.
Those were hideous. Those were awful. And, like, these, like, I hear what you're saying, Clinton. It puts two things into one and... cool, but it seems like such a gimmick to me. Everybody has done, or most people have tried to do smart eyewear, and it has failed every single damn time.
If Google's failing,
I don't know why I'm coming to bat for this, but that's why I was so surprised when you say there's nothing going on with the lenses. It's just using glasses as a platform for other pieces of tech. Maybe that's the way to go around.
It's just one more thing to forget to charge.
You know what? I have to get glasses. I went to the optometrist. He's like, yeah, you need them. You can't really see, my dude. So maybe I would get these. I don't know. But like you said, that is the problem. If you are somebody who needs to wear these 100% of the time, at some point you have to take them off.
Yeah.
At that point, Huawei would say, why don't you buy two?
No, that's exactly what they'll tell you. Of course they will, because they want to make money.
Maybe a third for the car. So yeah, this is all very, I don't know, I think it's exciting. Some pundits read this stuff and use it like, same stuff.
Yeah, I'm not interested at all in the eyewear, but I think the P30 Pro, I think Huawei have gotten very good at making really premium devices.
Yeah.
They were a bit hit and miss a couple of years ago, but now they've gotten into the kind of, I guess, the rhythm of actually.
So, one of the things I was saying to somebody on Twitter yesterday during the live stream, they were saying, oh, like Huawei is just nailing this. I was like, I think what they've done right is that they've focused on making one feature really, really great. Mm-hmm. And in this aspect, it was, firstly, I would say that it was the battery technology. And now they're focusing on the camera with their collaboration with Leica. And you can see it. You can see how that collaboration and that focus is turning out. I mean, you've got arguably on paper one of the best smartphone cameras we've ever had. Like, it's from little Huawei that came here with, like, budget phones back in the day. And now they're, like, garnering this premium price. I think it's amazing for me, I think.
Yeah, they've made huge strides in the country. I wouldn't be surprised if they overtake Samsung in the very near future.
I think they could.
Them's fighting words.
I think they could.
So we'll have reviews, previews, all of that good stuff linked below the podcast. Before we end up just on that Razer, those Razer glasses you're talking about, please Google Oakley Razer Wire.
No, Clinton.
The worst pair of glasses that mankind has ever...
Link it in the post.
I think I'll just make it the header image because it's so ugly. Oh my gosh. Okay, everybody, we will see you next week with no technical or load shedding problems.
Hopefully.
We'll keep on trucking. So for myself, for Brendan.
Cheerio.
Robin.
Cheers.
We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Look at this, Robin.